The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Pushes it to right field, and it is gone! On a 1-2 pitch, he got a down and in fastball and hit it on out of here for his third of the season.
Tell you what, we talked about Orlis getting better and better with each game.
50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram and Peters. We are live at Porky's Bar and Grill in Etna. Our For the Win charity drive rolls on. You stop by, you bring a gift card to any major retailer, Target, Walmart, Amazon, you name it. It goes to a good place. The Greater Pittsburgh Women's Center and Shelter, helping out those people who really need our help this holiday season, helping them create a better holiday for their friends and family. And that's part of our big charity push here over the month of December. And that's why we're out and about at all these great places, including Porky's, where T-Bird, who once won our hot dog eating contest, was telling me that he's excited for some burnt ends in a few minutes. And I told him you can never go wrong
with burnt
ends.
Proper
in a barbecue
burnt
place.
Ends. I've never had proper
burnt ends. Have you been
ends.
To Kansas City?
No. I know that's like the home of the burnt ends. I probably...
Well, Craig Riley, if you're listening...
I probably have
little,
to do this.
Your Hubble. Lair, where you are.
Oh, he does like to he does like
crunching
to be in
the
that
numbers
layer. Oh, yeah.
Saying,
he's looking at the data. Content.
The streaming numbers are through the roof.
No, make sure you get a picture of yourself getting punched in the face. That's content. Post it. Cross-post it.
If the Steelers play an AFC championship game in Kansas City, we're going.
Okay.
And even if I have to pay out of pocket and then figure
invoice,
it out.
Invoice Nick Wright.
Down
who will
the
then
road.
Pay
I will do
it.
That. But
yes.
If it's Steelers Chiefs, we're there.
Is it a situation where Nick Wright would pay for us so long as the Chiefs ended up winning the game? And then if the Steelers won, he'd be like, I'm so despondent, I'm not going to foot the bill for you
guys. I don't think I could talk Nick into going because he'd have to – maybe I could because his show Monday's not till later. He doesn't do mornings anymore. I think I might be able to swing that.
What if they just sent his show out there because the Steelers are a big brand name?
Not a Fox game, though. He'll be there at the Super Bowl.
That's true.
If we're in New Orleans, we're going to do that, too.
Oh, God, I might not survive a New Orleans trip at 40
Why?
Years
we
old.
We did it, Malzie.
Yeah, I know. It was years ago, Pony. That was many, many moons ago. I'm like old Obi-Wan Kenobi here.
So the Spencer Horwitz thing happens at 10:45 last night.
Mm-hmm.
And Poppy Annie and I reacted on the sports call to it. I saw what was going on social media. Then I turned the station on this morning, and I heard one version of the trade from the morning guys. Then I heard a completely different reaction to it with Starkey. Doran said, and I quote, I love this trade.
Mm-hmm.
Starkey hated it. Who would you say you are closer to on the spectrum?
Joe.
Joe, very anti the Spencer Horwitz deal. Doran said, I love
what
this
were,
deal.
I'm closer to Joe. Can you give me some detail? What were Doran's reasons for loving it?
Economics 101. Supply and demand. You have a lot of pitchers. You don't have a lot of hitters. You traded one of your pitchers who is not one of your elite prospects or great young arms, had a very good year last year, but is not someone that necessarily has to be a part of your future. And you swapped him out for a guy at a position of need who had a pretty good rookie year, even though he's old for a rookie. He's in his late 20s.
I understand the logic there, but man, you know what's interesting about this Spencer Horwitz is that opinions about him are like all over the map. Now, Keith Law is by no means an infallible figure in baseball analytics circles.
But he did used to work for the Blue Jays.
He previously worked for the Jays. By the way, just the hilarious Jays connection. This is a guy Charrington, I think, drafted when he was with the Jays or helped draft.
Their assistant GM came from Toronto, and Matt Haig, now their hitting coach. We're just building.
We're building the Blue Jays south.
We got Isaiah Kiner for Leffy here, too.
And maybe we could get Vlad Jr. That would be nice.
And I heard this is not the first time they've tried to trade for this guy.
Okay, so...
So he's been in their crosshairs for a while now.
So Keith Law is bona fides. Everybody kind of knows who he is. Carnegie Mellon's very smart guy.
Nerdy prospect
and
guy.
And he's often been very right about prospects. To leaven that with, he has been wrong. He once said Kevin Newman was the best pure hitter in his draft class. Best hit tool. Just was always going to hit in the major leagues.
And then he turned into Paul Newman the second he got to the majors.
He might have turned into, I don't know, he might have turned Newman into from Newman Seinfeld. From Seinfeld. Yes. Thank you. Or Paul
T-Bird,
Rubin.
Did you
or
watch
Paul
Seinfeld?
Rubens.
I love Seinfeld.
Ah.
I don't think it's held up that well because every single episode could just be cured with having a cell phone, but like some of the individual lines have held up well, like George is getting frustrated or all that stuff, like the Costanza stuff.
I just think the characters are great. I love Kramer.
Who's your favorite?
Do you love
Kramer.
The fact that they're all like remorseless sociopaths who learn nothing from their actions? That's basically the point of every episode.
I've not watched a ton of Seinfeld. I've watched maybe 30 to 40 episodes. I know there's a lot more. I think George is the MVP.
But there's no, well, he's Larry David. They didn't like. The show is about Larry David, essentially, and Larry David is played by George. That's Larry David in fictional form. Like, when he's with the Yankees and he gets them wearing cotton uniforms or whatever. No. The best one is George can't have sex because his girlfriend is mono. And Elaine is in a similar situation with her boyfriend. Not being able to do that makes Elaine dumber. Like, she just can't, like, function. And George becomes basically the world's smartest man, like a Flowers for Algernon situation here, Pony, for that reference for you. He's telling the Yankees, he's, like, lecturing Jeter and Bernie Williams on how to hit. And he's like, it's a simple math equation. It's, you know, velocity V, and he's just hitting home fake home runs out of Yankee Stadium. And Jeter finally goes, you know, we did win the World Series last year. And George goes, in six games. Like, those are great bits.
Charlie, were you a Seinfeld guy?
Those are great bits.
I wasn't a Seinfeld guy until college when one of my fraternity brothers, his dad, was actually the producer for Seinfeld. So,
wow.
Oh, so he was...
What a flex!
So he was pretty poor, huh?
Yeah. I'm, yeah. That's
what was
all.
The dad's name? I feel like I've seen enough episodes.
His name is Tim. He also produced Two Broke Girls, I believe.
Oh,
on
one
CBS.
Of my favorites.
The wow. man is Kat Dennings.
Yes, that show.
I think I've said this before. I fantasized about being with... I don't even know why I'm even going down this road.
Oh,
can
no.
Get back
oh,
to baseball,
you just
please?
Started driving the car down there. I think we could all kind of figure out where it was headed, though.
All right. So
I know on Horwitz, I have like a pretty defined opinion. So I thought at first, like, and this frustrates me, it seemed like an overpay right off the bat.
Ortiz, gave two prospects,
Ortiz,
too.
Ortiz for Horwitz, I think, feels more like a true baseball trade.
It is.
We really do have supply here. We have a demand for this position. Maybe Ortiz goes to Cleveland and is better than he was here. Maybe Horwitz isn't as good as they're hoping, but, like, seemed like a fair deal. Throwing in two prospects made it seem weird, and then just reading more about Horwitz from the people who are, like, really on the inside here has made me very uneasy. Like, if this guy doesn't get on base at a pretty prodigious clip, you're getting a lower power guy. Like, all the exit velocities and stuff they use to match, like, does this guy hit the ball hard and have bad luck or whatever? This guy doesn't hit the ball that hard. The bat speed's not that great. The one good thing he does is get on base because he's got, like, a terrific batting eye.
It's interesting. I know.
He doesn't chase. You know what he reminds me of? I'll give you a nice, concise example. Like, a destitute man's Joey Votto. And I mean emphasis on destitute here, because that's the kind of player profile I get. A lefty who crushes right-handed pitching, but really gets on base more than he does anything else.
Yeah, he doesn't.
Doesn't crush pitching. He's got a 360 OBP last year.
Yeah, that's really good.
That's very good.
It was tops among all the rookies last year, and there were guys like Jackson Merrill and
But he's also he's going to be 27.
Yeah,
this
he was
year.
A late bloomer. He was blocked by Vladimir Guerrero Jr. There, I have no issue with that. I mean, that's how the Pirates got Brian Giles. Essentially, is you look for guys that are good but just have better players ahead of them. I heard that they were very in Toronto. This is so. Let me go inside baseball for 2 seconds. That they thought maybe he benefited from the automated strike zone in the minor leagues.
Okay.
Because he had such a good eye, and they thought maybe that wouldn't translate to the major leagues where it's still, you know, we're still talking about.
Yeah, it's still umps.
You know, the Jerry West of the, not Jerry West.
It's
the
Cowboy.
Joe West.
Angel
Hernandez.
Well, no. Angel's
not anymore.
Gone now.
They're both gone. I'm thinking of like the old timer.
Yes. The guys who made it about themselves.
You get what I'm saying. Tim McClellan, guys like that.
Yes.
And he overachieved this year, and they flip him to Cleveland, who immediately flips him to Pittsburgh. I think in a vacuum, it's a fair trade. I agree. Like, I gave the trade, I think, on Twitter a B-. I think, yeah, you gave up some extra arms in your minor league system, but they're not considered to be high-end prospects. They're decent prospects. Right now, as crazy as this sound, I think the paradigm shifted. Hitting is more valuable than pitching is. Pitching is more plentiful than hitting is, mm-hmm. the way that the game has shifted.
Yep.
But here's ultimately why I agree with Starkey. It's such a small market move. What I had in mind for this Pirates offseason to make me happy, to put a smile on my face, to change the narrative of how last season ended so poorly, to imbue me with hope that this season would be different with Skeens in his first full year and everything else, was that they'd actually go out and make some major moves, not a ton, but a couple of big moves to show people that they mean business. This is not one of those trades.
The only way this move becomes is if it's a precursor to move, because they have control of the guy for a long time and he's cheap.
They got a good platoon first baseman, I think, with a little bit of upside.
He's on the strong side of the platoon because there's more right-handed pitchers than left-handers.
And he hit him fine. And look, the Pirates won a World Series in 79s with platoons. I know that's 45 years ago, but I'm not denigrating platooning players because I think it does have value, clearly. It's just, it's a guy that hit 12 home runs last year.
At one of the positions where it's supposed to be easier to find power.
And your third baseman hits for no power. And
your team didn't hit for any power last year
either.
You're
one of the worst lineups in the entire league. You got to make a considerable jump from last year. And Spencer Horwitz just doesn't move the needle for me that way. I'm flummoxed on how Doran could say he loves the trade. Like when I think of like loving something, I'm picturing a move that like pays big dividends for the team. I don't feel that way about this, and I'm very concerned. I heard Parado drive it in with Joe too.
John did not pull any punches.
He was down at the winter meetings. He said that in all his years of doing it, and he's covered 100 lost teams and rebuilding Pirates teams, they've never felt more irrelevant as a team that's going to make splashy moves one way or the other, whether that's dumping payroll and getting rid of big guys
or
actually
adding payroll.
Yes, or like making some big baseball trades, neither. And you've only got Paul Skeens for a very small window. You've got to maximize it and take advantage of it. And it doesn't sound like they are, and this trade doesn't make me think that they're any closer to doing that.
It would be better if I thought they were going to use some of the small amount of money saved maybe from this to make a big move, but I don't think they will. I'm going to read this. This is Keith Law's lead graph. This is certainly one of the strangest deals I can remember, as Spencer Horwitz is suddenly a hot commodity, which is unusual for a 27-year-old first baseman with middling power and fringy bat speed.
Fringy.
He's like, hey, I'm not a fan of this guy. But it's very clear that Keith Law feels the Guardians won this deal convincingly.
Texas on the Edgar Steiner Associates fan text line 412-928-9370. The Pirates make their first move of the offseason. Also, what Jerry Dulac said today about TJ Watt that raised eyebrows. But first, a headline. All right, we are live at Porky's Bar and Grill here in Aetna. Come on down for the win charity drive. We're raising money and collecting gift cards for the Women's Center and Shelter of Greater Pittsburgh. Every little bit counts. If you want to go to our website and do it there, you can, 937thefan.com. There's a Donate Here tab. But do it in person. You get to hang out with us, have a few drinks. A dollar off the smoked wings goes to the cause here, which is cool. And
smoked and double fried, I just saw too.
Yeah, I looked at the menu the entire break, and I still don't know what I'm going
to
get.
They have, if you guys have not been down to Porky's, they have a gigantic offset smoker that I think just runs constantly, basically, outside the front door of the restaurant. And that, frankly, is one of the greatest signs you could ever
see. It is inviting.
I mean, it's just like, oh, wait a minute. They're smoking various kinds of meat on this smoker outside the door? Yeah, I'll walk in. You can come by, see us.
It's a lighthouse for, like, a weary sea traveler.
For a weary sea traveler. And one of your I wouldn't even call him an enemy or a nemesis. He's a friend of me, but in a funny way. Our pal Fake John and Robinson stopped by
to
see us.
He's all dressed up. Pretending to be important.
He also was very generous to the Women's Center and Shelter of Pittsburgh. Made a generous donation, but trolled you still in the process.
Oh, yeah, that's because he's fighting an uphill battle with a losing bet with me. Jerry Dulac today was asked by a guy named Larry, will TJ Watt be a top priority for the Steelers to extend this offseason? Dulac, no. He has one more year on his contract. When you have 1 year left on your contract,
that's when the Steelers
give you a new deal. That is precisely why we're talking about George Pickens and his contract and his future with the Steelers, because next year is the last year on his deal. Watt has 1 year left. He's not a top priority.
That's an eye-opening thing. Was Jerry being sarcastic, like he thought it would come through by just saying no, and the obvious answer is yes, of course he's a top priority?
No, because he did answer some – there was a surprising, and not just from this Larry character, there were several – questions. Tommy asked, do you think the Steelers will give Watt an extension this offseason? So same question. Maybe, but maybe for the sole purpose of lowering his cap hit, which is $30 million. Not for the sole purpose of re-upping a guy that is right now the odds-on favorite to win Defensive Player of the Year and one of the best defensive players in team history and a slam-dunk first ballot Hall of Famer with several years left who doesn't have a major injury on his resume lately that you would say is going to limit him or prevent him from continuing to be an elite player. No, it's to make sure the cap ramifications are better for the Steelers.
He's played in every game since he partially tore the pec and missed seven games in 2022. He's 30 for 30.
And then it is knee scoped.
Yeah, right. That was, you were Johnny on the spot, first man in with that one. I got to give you a lot of credit there. I'm going to play like devil's advocate for Jerry here and try to get into the headspace of why he wouldn't be a priority. There's no way that they would feel so good about Herbig and Highsmith that they would do the old Branch Rickey bit of, well, like if they don't win a playoff game again this year, we can not win playoff games with you. We can not win playoff games without you. He's too important to what they do, man.
Yeah, I mean, one of Dan Rooney's great regrets was letting Rod Woodson go
right.
When the guy still had a lot of gas in his tank. And this is the same kind of player.
It's the same concept.
Not position, but the same
thing.
It's
the same concept insofar as Woodson was universally regarded as, like, what, one of the three or four best defensive players, period, in the whole league?
Cower called him the second greatest defensive player in Steelers history, which I thought was a stretch, but yeah.
I don't think he's that far off, but my point, he's a 75th anniversary player. They rarely have had guys who are in that stratosphere relative to the entire league. Woodson was one, and Watt is clearly one.
Joey, do you think the Steelers will sign Watt to a new deal? He got the question a bunch of times. They might, but they have other contract issues beyond him. Russ Wilson, Fields, Najee, Warren, all without contracts.
Najee?
Other than Russell Wilson, the other three guys are pimples on TJ Watt's hairy ass. They're not even close.
I would agree with you. He lumps Najee in, like, what? Wait a minute.
You're not going down your checklist of guys that you need to figure out or things that you need to do, and TJ Watt is below those guys just because he has one more year left on his contract.
You're not likely to give him an extension after this season, but you would consider paying not just one but two running backs with like new contracts.
I think Warren's a restricted free agent, so he'll get a new deal from the Steelers.
Okay, but my point is
that's
two running backs on your roster who are not rookie deal guys.
But that what I was going to say though is the Warren contract is not like a complicated negotiation.
Sure,
he's restricted, so other teams aren't going to sign him. You just have to find like a happy place deal with him, which they will do. That's in no way something that is like preventative or cost prohibitive.
Cannot exist in concert with giving Watt a new deal.
Exactly. I figured when I saw these Watt questions in Jerry's mailbag that he would just say, hey, idiot, he's one of the great players in team history. They'll find a way to get the deal done. Whatever he wants, they'll give him. They'll present him with pretty much a blank check, and they'll let him fill out the number on it. That's TJ Watt's future with the team.
And do you think that's prudent, though, to let him just fill out a blank check number? Because that I would kind of draw a line in the sand there. He's getting into his early 30s, and I don't think I would just be so cavalier, despite all he's done individually, that I would feel comfortable just saying, oh, yeah, we want to make you the highest paid for like another 5-6 years or whatever. I think TJ Watt probably has 3 to 4 more good years, real like elite years at the very top of the heap. You don't want to be – I just don't think you want to be left holding the bag, maybe having to pay a guy huge money. But then they were willing to pay Cam Hayward still pretty good money, and he's playing out of his mind.
Yeah, but there's no guaranteed money on those on that contract.
But in Watt's case, it would be a different animal.
Yeah, of course. But I know, but he's still one of the great players in the league regardless of position.
How many years would you feel comfortable on the next deal, like being big money?
I don't know. What do they typically do in this situation? A 3 or 4 year deal?
I would think four year deal.
Yeah.
Would they call it a 5 year deal? Because they always like to announce like it all wonky and say, because it drops the AAV down in their telling of things.
Maybe, but just a deal that essentially keeps him in Pittsburgh till
he's a Steeler for life.
Old. Yeah.
Unless he really wants to keep playing.
Which I don't actually see him doing.
I mean, his brother went and played for the Cardinals.
Yeah, his brother also is in, what, his late 30s right now and is going to games eating Sarah's chocolate pretzels. And how does he get out of – what a deal he's got. We're talking about Pomp with Joe. Watt is part of the NFL on CBS, and I feel like he misses shows all the time to just go to games or just not
– think he's got, like, a part-time deal?
Maybe.
Agent just negotiated JJ only is going to work this many weeks.
Maybe we can ask Aditi about that.
Unlimited PTO.
I'm sure she'd be very gun-shy about taking us behind the curtain with
what's the status of Aditi dropping by the location today?
No update. How old do you think J.J. Watt is?
30.
He's 35, dude. That's it. Oh, and he's been out of football for 2 years.
Hard miles on that vehicle.
Yeah, much harder than TJ.
Played the game in a different way, kept tearing. How many times did he tear his pec?
How many times did his nose, like, break and start bleeding in games? It was like a Ric Flair wrestling
match. Do you think he wanted it to happen because it got him in the crowd and his teammates fired up? He was just hoping somebody would break his nose?
I actually don't know if it was – I think I misspoke there. I don't think it would break. I think he had something on his nose that if you just touched it, it would almost instantly start bleeding.
It wasn't one of those bits where the helmet didn't fit him correctly and it would, like,
I don't know,
chafe the skin?
Follow us on Twitter, brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Mike Florio next on Steelers, Eagles, and more, but first a headline. Live from Porky's in Aetna, our For the Win charity drive continues, raising money and collecting gift cards for the Women's Center and Shelter of Greater Pittsburgh. Awesome cause, trying to help make their Christmas brighter. You can go to 937thefan.com and donate here. You can stop by and see us broadcasting until 6. Drop off gift cards. We'll take money, too, and help people out who need it. Time to talk to Mike Florio. He is brought to you by JP Roofing and Siding, your hometown roofing expert. Mike, do Steelers fans have a gripe or a beef with this 3-game in 11-day stretch that includes at Philly, at Baltimore, and Kansas City on Christmas? Is it a legitimate complaint?
Well, it's a complaint, but they're hardly alone. The Jets started the season with 3 games in that same time frame. And the NFL has gotten to the point where they just don't care about the wear and tear cumulatively on a team from having to do it. Their attitude is, and I don't agree with this statistic as reflecting the full impact of playing with limited rest, but they cling to this idea that the injury rate for games played with traditional Sunday to Sunday rest is no different than the injury rate for games played Sunday to Thursday. So it doesn't matter. And anyone with common sense knows that's just one small piece of the story. How many times are there guys who could have played on Sunday with normal rest, but they're not ready to go on Thursday. But the league ultimately doesn't care. And this is part of that stretch run with a bunch of strong opponents that the Steelers will have to navigate. And it's not going to be easy. And they've known all along, from the moment the schedule came out, this is what they're going to be dealing with. It's not fair. The league doesn't care.
Mike, how unusual, in your estimation, just knowing what you know about it, was the way that the Pickens injury situation went down? From Mike Tomlin talking to Tracy Wolfson before the inactives were announced and making it seem like Pickens was going to play, to what we're at now, which is he missed that game, he's missing this game, and it seems like this is a pretty significant hamstring injury.
Well, look, anybody that's ever had a hamstring injury knows that it takes time to heal. And when you think it's healed, you find out the hard way it's not, because not until you're on the field and you truly open it up at top capacity does it potentially grab, re-injure, and then you're almost back to square one. This, I think, is as simple as somebody who's looking at the bigger picture, like Tomlin, somebody who's thinking, I need this guy to be 100% in the postseason, and we'll just get through however many games we have to get through late in the regular season to ensure he's 100%, we're going to shut him down until we know he's 100%. We're not going to take any chances, and we're going to rely on our other guys to step up. And that quote of his from after the game, you know, maybe at some point you guys will believe me. He believes in these other receivers, and more importantly, Russell Wilson believes in them. He trusts his guys. He'll throw to his guys. And it doesn't have to be George Pickens. It can be Van Jefferson. It can be Calvin Austin. It can be Scotty Miller. It can be Ben Skoranek. And when you have Pat Freiermuth, that helps as well. So I think that it's smart because you want Pickens to be able to go full speed, no limitation, when the first round of the playoffs rolls along. And this team's going to have to go on the road at some point. They're not going to be the number one seed unless there's a total collapse by the Chiefs and the Bills. And so play it smart, be ready to go, be ready to go on the road like 2005 all over again. Not that they're going to be the seventh seed, but go on the road, make some noise. You're better off with George Pickens, who's healthy, than George Pickens, who's hobbled when you get to those games.
Mike, it sounds like you like my half-baked idea then, which is, given this stretch and with the Philadelphia game really meaning very little to the Steelers, all you need to do is beat Baltimore to win the division. Why not have all your stars on a pitch count in this game against Philly, play Justin Fields more, and make sure you get to the finish line in one piece?
I still think that with the guys who are healthy, you got to go all out. I think that's the culture, the mindset, the thing that will help you. There could be something that happens in the fourth quarter of this game against the Eagles, which is big deal. A couple of 10-win teams. Now, this is the first time since 1985 in Week 15. There are two separate games with all four teams playing 10 or more wins, and they're both being played at the same damn time on competing networks.
What's that all about? How are there two 425?
There's no 405 games this week at all.
I've never seen that,
well,
Mike.
Here's what happened. When they added the extra week to the regular season, they gave Fox and CBS a second joint doubleheader 425 game to go along with the 1 o'clock game. It used to be week 1. This year they made it week 15. So Fox has Steelers, Eagles, CBS has Lions, Bills, and there's also Chargers. Who are the
Bucks.
Chargers playing? Chargers, Bucks, and Broncos, Colts. I mean, there are four games oozing with playoff implications in 425. Look at the 1 o'clock window. Good luck finding a game that has both teams that really have anything to play for.
Yes.
And I'm astounded they didn't flex something. There's a couple of Monday night games that are playoff contender versus non-playoff contender. Vikings, Bears, Raiders, Falcons. Now, they could turn out to be good games, but to have so many compelling games clustered at 4:25 Eastern on Sunday, they should have done something to move some of those games around so there'd be at least one 1 o'clock game that is going to draw a lot of people in. I really think they whiffed on this one, and it didn't become obvious until we turned the page on week 14 and said, hey, all right, I remember thinking on Monday morning, hey, when's that Steelers-Eagles game if Lions-Bills is at 425? Holy crap, it's at 425, too. I think they really blew it with that one, and they would never admit it, but I think deep down they recognize they should have shuffled some of those games around.
Mike, what's the league's ultimate position, you think, on now, granted, because Dallas screwed up royally, this didn't end up affecting the outcome of the game. The Bengals still won, but there's a no-call face mask. I follow some people that write about the Cowboys, and they were even saying you can't miss calls like that. What is the NFL's position on just blatant stuff like that and it, you know, not being adjudicated where, oh, yeah, we got to go back and quickly take care of that and make sure everybody knows that was a 15-yard penalty? Just some of the constant story, I guess, is what I'm saying here, of uncalled or poorly called penalties that end up coming close to deciding games most weeks.
Well, and face mask is the one that is so easy to spot. It's clear and obvious when it happens. And you're talking about a group of officials, middle-aged or older, who are out there without pads on, trying to survive among the gladiators, trying to see in the naked eye at full speed what's happening. They're going to miss things. And here's the problem for the league. As they're embracing more and more of the technological capacity, you've got replay review augmented by replay assist. They're trying to get these things right. So face masks have never been subject to replay review. I think in the off season they have to change that because it's too easy to spot. And it's the original safety rule. It's been around forever. From the moment they put face masks on helmets, I'm sure there was a period of time where they weren't flagging it and guys are getting swung around by their face masks. But that's the safety rule that's been there since at least the 70s because guys are going to get neck injuries if you're grabbing them by the face mask and throwing them to the ground. So they need to do that. And it's embarrassing to the league that it hasn't happened yet because, you know, the casual fan doesn't understand when replay assist intervenes and makes changes to things. Why aren't they changing that? We had the Thursday night game between the Vikings and the Rams where Sam Darnold was blatantly face masked in the end zone. It seems like every week there's one of these. And the explanation is replay review is not available to change it, and most people refuse to accept that. That needs to change. And hopefully in March when they set the new rules for 2025, that'll be one of the first ones that gets passed.
Mike, we buried the lead here. One of the Steelers' all-time arch nemesis and enemies and rivals looks like he's now going to go coach in college, Bill Belichick, to North Carolina. A, is it a done deal? And B, what's your reaction to Bill no longer chasing Don Shula's record and electing to go down to the college ranks?
Well, let's look at this big picture. Last year, he gets fired by the Patriots, and I know they tried to dress it up and make it look like it wasn't a firing. They fired him. There were seven other jobs available. He got interviewed for one. He didn't get the job. He made this calculated effort, I believe. Everything he does is calculated, and that's not a criticism. You can either go through life randomly and accidentally, or you can go through life with a plan. He goes through everything in life with a plan. He does all these media jobs in the hopes of creating demand for his services for 2025. Think about this. A week has gone by, and I reported on Sunday on Football Night in America that he was very surprised no NFL teams had reached out to him. And I had confirmed Bears, Jets, Saints, the three teams with vacancies, no communication with Belichick, even though he's free and clear. They can talk to him anytime. So in the past week, since the North Carolina thing popped up out of nowhere and everybody was like, what the hell is this? There hasn't been a single report from any Belichick-friendly reporter, and there are plenty of them out there, that there's another team that's interested. There's a college team that is saying, oh, Bill, wait until our season's over. NFL team that currently has a coach. Mystery team. Nothing. There's so many different ways that these reports can go, and there hasn't been a single person who has said, hey, there's another team out there that would like Bill to wait because it wants to hire him. Think about that. It's all North Carolina. And I'm writing something now based upon some ESPN reporting about sticking points between UNC and Belichick. If I'm UNC, why am I giving him everything he wants? What's his leverage? He wants to coach next year. This may be the only place that's going to give him an opportunity to do it. At some point, they have to dig in their heels, which would be fitting for their nickname, and they have to say, no, we're not giving you whatever money you want. We're not giving you this succession plan where your son Steve takes over after you're done. We're not doing these things because we don't have to because there's no door number two. It's us or it's go back and do the media thing again, which, I mean, you know, look, he's got so many platforms. I really don't pay attention to what he says. He's got great insights, but I don't think he really wants to do that. He wants a coach.
Why hasn't West Virginia gotten involved in this sweepstakes, Mike?
Hey, I've said this many times. We kicked their ass last year in the ball game. Why is he talking to North Carolina? Come to Morgantown, Bill. You want to make a professional program in a conference where you can make some noise, but I don't know what they're doing in Morgantown. And
they should hire Brian Hartline. That should be their move.
Oh, really?
I've seen people connecting him to that gig.
Don't be surprised if that happens. But But, you know, I'm only 30 miles away, but they're not seeking out my opinion on these matters. But some of the names that have popped up for that job, it's like, really? We're going to die.
How about Mike Florio, West Virginia football GM?
Oh, like a Woj thing.
Can't take the pay cut. Don't want to. I don't. Can you imagine? Can you imagine?
That's a nice flex. Congratulations.
This speaks to how desperately Bill Belichick wants to coach. He's jumping into this world of NIL and transfer portal. And every year. Now, the good side is, and this is one of the reasons why Nick Saban quit the Dolphins after 2 years. In the NFL, you get one first-round pick. If you're a good recruiter in college, you get as many as you can convince to come play for you. And if Belichick can parlay this, hey, basically you're going to come here and major in football, and I'm going to get you ready for the NFL, that might be the thing that makes a difference.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. See him Sunday night on the air, getting you ready for good primetime action. Thanks, Mike. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks, guys.
I completely blanked on who's playing Sunday night football. That's why I said primetime
action. Good primetime action.
You know who
good
is?
No, I don't. Good old-fashioned primetime action. But I'm going to tell you who's playing. Here's what we got.
Because the Browns and Chiefs are playing at 1, so it's not them.
Seahawks and Packers. That's a decent game, but does anyone take the Seahawks super seriously?
I'm starting to. I'm a Geno guy. I'm a Geno convert. Speaking of West Virginia.